Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. It's Monday morning. My name is Keith Washburn. To begin our broadcast, host Craig Lubo talks with Melvin Merritt about the annual Penny Mill Picnic and Community Empowerment event coming this Saturday. Then in the second half of the broadcast, Craig returns to talk with Beth Hill, a job readiness specialist, about her work with women preparing to leave Topeka Correctional Center. Stay tuned for the calendar of events in the middle of the broadcast and the 420 drug news at the end of the broadcast. Coming up is Craig and his guest.
Okay, thank you for joining us today on Jaws of Justice. This is Craig Lubo. And with me today, I have Melvin Merritt. Melvin, you probably know because he is a co-host and does some shows here as well, but today he's on as a guest. And we're going to be talking about Penny Mill Foundation. And there is an event coming up on July 14th, but before we talk about the event, Melvin, tell us what Penny Mill is.
Well, first let me say that during this, at the beginning of its genesis, for lack of a better word, I had a thought one day that I said, what if the community could come together with different cultures and really, you know, get to know one another, because we're in grocery stores and various venues, and but, you know, we don't know anything about one another as it relate to cultures. And I was basically thinking about Hispanic community, because we have a large Hispanic community within the in the inner city. And so I said, well, you know, as a thought, what would it be to have all these people on the same canvas, so to speak? And this doesn't mean that, you know, it hasn't been done, because I tell people I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel. The only thing I'm trying to do is be a spoke in the middle of the wheel. And so the first year that I did put this event on with the help of other people, it was about 800 to 900 some odd people. And I think Jeff was came out and was at the event as well. But at that particular time, we didn't even have a name for it. So I said, you know, and I was telling my committee that was at the table, I said, I don't have a name, so what can we call it? Because at that time, I was collecting 1 million pennies. And so I had the penny cans all around the city at Price Choppers, liquor stores, and various places, and to collect this million pennies. And I would tell people, don't get tunnel vision, because the dollar bills was folded up in the can as well. So people were doing that, and so we was excited. So we have surpassed that number. And that's only because we have developed some sponsors. And so I'm excited about it. And that's how Penny Mill came about. And Penny is for the collection of the million pennies. And the meal is for 1 million pennies. And that's how that name came about, with the logo, a penny, and a windmill. And so when people see that, they wonder, what is Penny Mill? So basically, that's what it is, to bring different cultures together on the same campus. If that's answering your question.
And this is an annual event?
This is an annual event, and someone had asked me that on the first event, and I said, because at first I was just experimenting and wondering how it was going to go out, you know, and within the first year. And it was so successful, and so I decided that I'm going to make it an annual event. And it's an undertaking, you know. It's something to do, because it takes an entire year almost to pull it all together. And so we have two events that we do, and the second event is, we call it the community bowling excursion. And what I do is to bring about 60 to 70 young people together, and Strike and Spare has been a great venue for us to hold that annually. And we feed the kids, but I generally tell the parents that we will not babysit your children, so they would have to escort their children. And so we try to do them real good, and we rent out about 10 lanes. And a lot of kids, and we even have one lane for bumper lane for the young kids. And so That has been very successful with the community bowling excursion. Thank God for my sponsors.
And between these events, are there activities through the year that the youth can participate in?
And that's a good question. Because we haven't filled that gap yet, because it takes so much to try to pull the Pentamill summer event together. And I know a friend of mine, he does events as well, and he does other events. And so I haven't found it to be, because I was trying to get a good date for the Pentamill event, because I had been having it on August, within the latter part of August. And I was bumping heads with a lot of other different agencies that I wanted out on the canvas as well. And so I came up with it this year. I said, I'm not going to have it in August this year. What I'm going to do is move it up to July, because it seemed like every time I would give an event, everybody would have it on that particular date. And so I said, wait a minute, if somebody's reading my mail or something, you know. So I was trying to be a little flip. And I said, I might just go ahead and have it on the 4th of July. And, you know, and I knew that wasn't going to work. So I moved it a week or so down on the 14th. And so it's working out real well, because the agencies don't have their the events in July, not the way they have it in August.
Mm-hmm. And part of your mission statement talks about empowering the young people and community.
How that happens,
right,
empowering the community? Well, a lot of people don't know, aren't aware of, like, when the first year I had this event, I had H&R Block, and a lot of people thought, at least think, that H&R Block just do taxes, mm-hmm. but they have other things going on in terms of funding for inner city black children. And they don't put billboards up with this type of information. So what I try to do is bring these agencies and these businesses out to inform and empower the community with some of the resources that's available to them, and they are unaware of it. And UPS was another one that I was totally shocked and surprised that they don't just deliver boxes, but they have other monies for, so to speak, for various college, for inner city college, you know, I'm placing that right, for inner city children to go to college. And so I was really amazed at that. So that's what motivated me to want to bring out this information, by having people come in a non-threatening environment like the park and the place that we're going to have it this year. And it's in a non-threatening environment where they can walk up to the table, find out, ask some questions, rather than trying to network. The network has been done, and we just bring it on right in the face of the community, so that way they can find out what's going on in their community.
Okay. And does your organization work with other organizations to provide and co-sponsor things together?
We haven't yet gotten to that level or that point, but what we try to do is work with them they work with us by being excited about bringing out their information to the Pentamill platform, so to speak. And so they love doing that. That's basically what they do. They go to various events and set up their booth, and VA is one of them. And they have been really good about coming out and sharing the information with the veterans. And so a lot of the veterans are unaware of some of the things that VA have for the veterans. And so that's the type of information that I'm trying to bring out and empower the community with, and by doing it annually every year.
Okay. And now it's going to be at the Ground Level Ministries?
Well, it's going to be on that property of Ground Level Ministries. some property that I have, and so opposed to bringing it to the park this year, we have enough property for the and I'm excited about this, is that we're going to have it at have a petting zoo with miniature goats and sheep and stuff like that. That's our first time ever having that. And 1 year we had the Kickapoo Indian tribe out. And so things like that that I like to try to bring to the community that don't get a chance to get exposed to things like this, you know, that we're trying to bring. Something unique, something different. But, you know, someone has already done it. You know, like I said, I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel. So that's one of the things that we're going to have.
All right. And you're going to have, now the agencies, what are the agencies that will have booths there?
Well, this year we're going to have Full Employment. We're going to have the Health Department out. One of the other agencies is which, and it's probably not an agency, but I can kind of consider it like an agency because that's Scientology. And a lot of people say, well, how did you get involved with the Scientology and having them out? And it's not that I, you know, get involved with these different agencies. What I'm just trying to do is that these agencies are in the community. Why not bring them out on this canvas and allow people to ask questions rather than to, I believe in this word saying conviction prior to investigation. Investigate what you've been maybe hearing and rumors and things like that and find out exactly what these people are all about. And not only when I say these people, that means Scientology and Full Employment, the Health Department, all of that is going to be, you know, on this canvas, so to speak.
And you got some on your website, some program goals and strategic plans. One of them is you refer to as Grade Watch.
I was hoping that you bring that up.
So tell us what that is.
The Grade Watch Incentive Program that I thought about, because I what I think about is some of the kids, especially the inner city kids that that are exposed to so much negative in the community. They're not motivated, you know, to elevate their grades or even have the incentive to want to do better for themselves. Only a few will come out of that very negative environment. So what we try to do with the Grade Watch Incentive Program, and it's nothing new, as I mentioned, what we would do is the person that have the lowest grade, and we'll try to connect with the schools and find out the students that are having some real problems, whether it be their family nucleus or whatever the case may be. And what we would try to do is to give them an incentive. And that incentive is, if you bring that grade, say for I'm used to F's and D's, and if you bring that grade from an F to a D, you're going to get an incentive in terms of money. And it's not a lot of money, but then if you begin to start elevating that grade, we want to take you out to dinner, you and your family, and encourage you to keep on keeping on and keep a watch on that child and their families and seeing how we can assist that child, encouraging that child or those children. And that's one of the things about Grade Watch Incentive Program, and I'm really excited about that.
And is there a plan that you have in place when you're looking at these youth that are having trouble to identify what the source of their problem is, why they're performing low?
Well, I know that one of them sometimes is some negative activities going on in their home. It might be that their parents or their mother or their father might be on drugs and those types of things. Those are that's pretty prevalent in the black community. And so what we do is try to find out exactly what's happening within their family nucleus and then find out what's, you know, causing them to be so have so much low self-esteem about themselves and encourage them, talk to them and tell them that they are better than that. And I usually have this thing about, where there's a will, there's an A. Not a way, but an A. And so all you have to do is have the will, and you can get that A.
I like that phrase. and in terms of resources, are you connected with some resources that you can refer them to if they have a drug addiction problem? do you work with them to get them into some kind of drug
counseling? Are you talking about the student or the parent?
Well, both, I mean, depending on who needs it.
Well, we haven't yet, but if a child is on drugs, I think the person has to have some type of treatment and start there, and so the person can be detoxed. And so I haven't had that experience of confronting a child with drugs, even though I know it's there, you know. So usually the biggest glaring point is their parents. And if their parents, and maybe the child is not using drugs, but it's that gateway, I call it, drug, which is blunts, marijuana, and stuff like that. And the child's mind is scarred because it can't think, you know, on the spot, because of the fact that this is the one thing that they find as an outlet for their problems and their situation, is to smoke blunts, and because there's a peer pressure going on, and the friends that they have are smoking blunts, and in order for them to, you know, to simulate, they have to act like it, you know, and be like it. And so that's one of the biggest problems that I have noticed.
And you said blunts or marijuana?
Blunts, they call them blunts. And don't let me get sitting here on the radio and try to educate you on it, because I'm unaware of it. Only thing for you is what I hear in the wind.
So at this event coming up on July 14th, mm-hmm. Okay, I don't think we said that. So it's going to be 9 a.m. to 3 p.m.
Yeah, 9, and usually I'm having everyone to be set up exactly at 9 o'clock so we don't have people moving around and trying to get their equipment set up and stuff. So, and it's still early Saturday morning. People are out, you know, it was out Friday night. So generally, you know, we're going to have music and mentioning music, we're going to have a dynamite band called the Galaxy Band. And so I was down in the light district, and they were entertaining down there, and I had never heard them. And so when I went down there, and they are off the chain, so to speak, and they are excellent. So I think the community is going to enjoy the music. It's an R&B, even though I am a Christian preacher, church person, but you know, that's a reason for it. There is a reason.
And one of the items listed on your flyer says Ron Old School. What is that referring to?
Well, Ron Old School is a person that's his stage name, so to speak, because he sings R&B, old school R&B, and that's what that's all about, and that's his stage name. Ron Old School.
Okay. And so you're going to have vendors, the entertainment. Will there be other bands besides Galaxy Band?
It's not a band, but we're going to have positive rappers, and that they're going to fill in those areas when the band is taking a break. And we're going to be filling it in with rapping, and then we're going to have some raffles. My wife generally will be handling the raffles, and raffles such as oil change, courtesy of Firestone. And so, you know, I'm really grateful to our sponsors and people that have been supporting the Penny Mill Foundation over the years, and it's been in its acceptance for about 10 years now. I couldn't have done it without people, and I got to give a shout out because the food is free, and that's Price Choppers. I got to do that, and because they have been very loyal and supportive to the Penny Mill Foundation, and if I don't say that, I'd be just feeling bad behind it.
And the Kids Discovery Ranch, is that just the petting zoo you're talking about, or is there more?
Well, the petting zoo, and this is going to be my first exposure to the petting zoo. Mm-hmm. But for my wife, she went on the internet and saw what they do, and they have miniature goats. And I think that when I talked with the guy that is head of it, and he was saying he might even bring out a couple of cows, and you know, in the inner city, children and families are not exposed to up close, you know, cows and goats and sheep like that. And I think that that would be a great exposure for the inner city kids, for just families, not necessarily just one type of culture. This is people event. And I always try to stress that, that just because that I'm black don't mean it's going to be a black thing. It's going to be a human community event. And that's why I'm trying to encourage all people to come and bring your children. And we also going to have a puppet show. This lady does a fantastic puppet show. She brings out her troops. And I think that that would be excellent for young people, and that they can go in. I think she gives them candy or whatever, and just things that children love to have with a showing of puppets.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are some of the things that we're going to have. And, of course, you know, we're going to have the best hot dogs in Kansas City because it's named Penny Mill Hot Dogs. So, and the water and everything is free, courtesy of my sponsors. And so I don't, you know, I know this is not an advertisement and things like that, but I just love giving a shout-out to these people that really deserve, because Penny Mill would not be in existence without these businesses, without the business community, because that's who I reach out to, is the business community. And, matter of fact, I'm encouraging some of the business community that is listening to this broadcast to contact me at, and can I give my number?
Yes.
816-204-0428, or they can reach us at pennymillfoundation@gmail.com. And that's Penny Mill, spelled like a penny, M-I-L-L, foundation@gmail.com. Or they can look at the website at www.pennymillinc.org. And again, my number is 816-204-0428.
All right. And what is your, well, you mentioned diversity. You mentioned Hispanic community and
yes,
Native American.
Right.
Geographically, is it focused mainly just on Kansas City, Missouri, inner city, or is it much broader?
Well, no, it's much broader because I reach over in Kansas City, Kansas, and I have a couple of friends over there that own horses, and so I reach out to them to bring their horses. You know, it's not enough space for a bunch of horses. Like the first year I had a lot of horses, and this year we like to bring out maybe a couple of horses, and I reach out to the people that live over in Kansas City, Kansas. Even though I have a couple of friends that owns some horses here in Missouri, but not just to answer your question, now it's anybody that can listen to, that hear the sound of our voices,
okay,
anywhere,
and they don't have to register.
They don't have to register.
Now,
if they want to participate and be an agency within that, yes, we can send them out a package, and we would email them a package. They sign it. And there is a $25 table fee, and which is not a lot of money. And so they pay that, send that package back, stating that they will be participating with that $25 table fee. Or they can be a sponsor. And so if they are a sponsor, then we try to promote them even more so with our flyers that's coming up.
Okay, so we are out of time. So this is going to be next Saturday, July 14th.
This coming Saturday, yes.
Okay, July 14th. And Melvin gave the contact information if you want more information. And thank you, Melvin, for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it.
Now, the calendar for July 9th. The KCMO chapter of Moms Demand Action will be held Wednesday, July 11th, 6 p.m., at the Waldo Branch Library, 201 East 75th Street, KCMO. You are invited to help them work for common sense gun laws at the state and national level. We the People, Educate to Liberate, will be holding a candidate forum Wednesday, July 11th, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Lucille Bluford Library, 3050 Prospect Avenue, KCMO. Candidates for State Representative District 26 and Jackson County Legislative District 2 will participate. All are welcome. Corey's Network and the Chuck E. Cheese at 18701 East 39th Street, Independence, Missouri, are once again teaming up to help pay for the funeral expenses of a victim of murder on Friday, July 13th, from 3 to 9 p.m. 15% of all purchases at the register, including food, merchandise, and token deals, will go to help bury a victim of murder under the age of 12. You are invited to help out this good cause and enjoy food, fun, and games. If you have information on a murder, call the TIPS hotline at 816-474-TIPS. That's 474-8477. Mothers of Incarcerated Sons and Daughters will have their monthly meeting Saturday, July 14th from noon to 2 p.m. at the Waldo Branch Library, 201 East 75th Street, KCMO. If you have a loved one that is incarcerated and need advice and support, MISD has members that may be able to help. The Penny Mill Picnic and Community Empowerment event will be Saturday, July 14th, 8:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Ground Level Ministries, 3307 East 26th Street, KCMO. For more information, contact Melvin Merritt at 816-204-0428 or email pennymillfoundation@gmail.com. My name is Jeff Humfeld, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. We want to thank our engineer today, Keith Washburn. And now, back to Craig and his guest.
All right. Thank you for staying with us. This is Craig Lubow again, and we're still on Jaws of Justice. And my next guest now that has joined us is Beth Hill. And Beth is a job readiness coach. She's worked through Washburn Institute of Technology. She has a master's in theater, and you have a PhD in speech communication.
Mm-hmm.
The most recent project that she has worked on is in the women's prison in Topeka. And so, of course, that's Kansas prison. And Beth, Topeka facility, that's the only facility that women go to in Kansas, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
So tell us about the project that you have at the prison there.
Well, in 2014, I became involved with a grant-funded project through Washburn Tech at Topeka Correctional Facility, and the plan was to bring in a technical program. The one they selected was a program called Certified Production Technician. And this is through an organization called MSSC, which is a nationally certifies this program. And as it turns out, Washburn Tech is the only place in the region that right now that offers that program. And along with that also was offered forklift driving, OSHA 10 certification, resume, conviction statement, and then time to take work keys, which is an assessment of reading, writing, and ability to find information on a chart and a graph. And so all of this was combined into the program for these four women who would like to be a part of this program. It would take about 6 to 8 weeks for them to get through everything. The end result was that we knew that industry, manufacturing industry, would be willing to hire felons. And these women could then go into those professions and start with salaries of close to $20 and over, which is at least in the beginnings is a start to a living wage. So that was the premise behind this whole thing, was to try to give them the skill sets to build, have a living wage for themselves and their families.
Okay. And how many people do you have as staff that work with you on this project?
We had, there was a dean that kind of took care of the overseeing of things. And then there was one person that was working with through the Department of Commerce that worked with us in helping them find actual, make connections with possible jobs in their areas. And then there was the instructor who was a electrical engineer, and then myself. So there was only three people that were actively involved on a day-to-day basis with the women. And I must say, too, this was also replicated on the maximum side, too. It was done on the minimum and the maximum side. Okay. So there was also an instructor on the maximum side. And then I worked with him on occasion with the women there as well.
And how do the inmates get into this program?
Well, a lot of it, inmate.com is a very powerful thing we discovered. And so as soon as the word got out that there was going to be such a program, they began to come and talk to us, and then the system told them that they should send in a Form 9, which was a form that they would literally fill out, and then it would go through the internal mail service and eventually get to us. And then we would call them out, and we would have a conversation with them and find out how much fire they had in their belly for doing this whole thing. And then we'd also check their TABE scores, which are scores that showed what their reading levels were and what their math scores were.
And that's called what scores?
It's TABE. It's an acronym, and right now I can't pull the whole thing out of my head. But what it amounts to is that when they entered the prison, which was probably not an ideal time to be testing anybody, but when they entered the prison, they were given a test to see what their reading scores were and what their math scores were. And then that would determine, like, if they had a sixth grade level reading or if they had math scores that were third grade or whatever they were. So we would find out what their TABE scores were. And then if they were reasonably good, if they were in, you know, high school level, then we would think, and if their reading scores, and often the women's reading scores were quite good, they were usually college level, often college level, or just a little below. And we decided that if they could read well, that we could probably manage to deal with the math issue. And sometimes we had them retested, and then we would invite them to come into the program. But we had to have individual interviews with them.
And the TABE test, mm-hmm. That was given by the prison or specifically your project?
No. That was, that's kind of a national thing. I mean, kids that go through school end up taking tests to find out what their reading scores are and their math scores are. And so that was something that the prison did to get a read on where they were at. But, of course, when they came into the prison, they were probably either coming off drugs or they were very stressed or whatever. So it was not a good testing situation for them to be in, so to dictate what their reading levels were or their math levels were. But that's something that's used in a lot of educational institutions to find out what kids—
that you would sometimes retest them.
We would ask them to be retested because we knew that they were probably not in a good space when they originally tested. And
now,
generally, we found that their scores went up.
And do they have to participate in your program to get retested, or prison retesting them?
No. We would just ask if we could have them retested, and so that would happen just for our purposes. But in some cases, we felt that because they were so fired up about being in the program, we'd say, "Oh, come on in, you know, let's get you in." And so that's kind of how it started. But then by word of mouth, there were more people that were showing up saying, "I'd really like to be a part of it," And so we just started taking names and find out where they were and what their exit dates were so that we could work them into the schedule before. And that became our mission, was to just try to get as many people through the program before the grant ended. Mm-hmm. And the grant now is ending on September 30th, and we've still got over 100 women that wanted to be in the program, but it's over.
No sign, at least right now, that the Department of Corrections
or the educational institution. No, there seems to be no particular interest at this point in continuing it, and I don't really know why.
Are there any other programs that they offer that would offer at least some of what you offer?
There are other programs that offer things like they'll do resumes and that kind of thing. There is an individual that is there now that will actually help women in finding work. But as far as the program itself, no, there isn't anything quite like that program there. They may bring in some other programming, but that doesn't seem to be definitive yet.
Are there other criteria, like do they have to go through things like substance abuse therapy and counseling before they can
Good point. Not necessarily before, but what we learned as we started doing all of this was that as they proceed through their time in prison, there are a number of things that they're supposed to be doing before they exit. Mm-hmm. And one of those things could be drug rehab of some sort. And there's one that's called SARP, where they are literally isolated from the rest of the population. And it takes quite a bit of time. And so if we knew that they had that on their program, then we would need to get them through our program first, mm-hmm. so that because they like to release them at the end of that rehab program rather than putting them back into the regular population. So we would always look at what their schedule was in terms of the different things that they had to fulfill, to see how we could best work into that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And the at Topeka, mm-hmm. When you spoke at the Community Reason event,
yes,
if I followed you correctly, they have approximately 670 inmates at that prison?
I think now it's up to about 800 now.
Okay. And so in the average age, is that still 36?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
So
yes.
When people, you mentioned 6 to 8 weeks to complete mm-hmm. this problem, what percentage of those, well, first, what percentage of that 800 would have been able to participate, and then what percentage actually completed your program?
Well, we had over 300 people that came through the program, probably close to 400 people who've come through the program. And all of the students that we had contact with, my colleague and I, and this is on the minimum side, I should say, mm-hmm. All of them graduated with some portion, if not all. The majority passed with the entire package. There were four certificates that made up the Certified Technical Technician Program. There were four different certificates. And if they completed all four certificates, then they were considered to be nationally certified, which means that they could take this anywhere in the United States. Mm-hmm. The majority the majority passed all four, and that's what we worked toward. If they didn't pass it the first time, we got them retested, and we retested them until they could pass it. The only thing that stopped us was if their release date popped up, okay. And then we couldn't get them done. But then we would often, in some cases, if they were willing, we would make arrangements for them to take the test at, mm-hmm. back at Washburn Tech after they were released. And in at least one situation that happened, and the woman then completed her certificate. But the majority of all of our students, which were close to probably 400 students were able to complete the program. And then we even had more students that didn't get into the program, but we invited them in for the forklift training. So they got forklift training and OSHA training, and then got a resume and a got to work on their resume and a conviction statement. So even with a forklift license, they can make $16, $18, $19 an hour.
And you used the phrase a couple of times, conviction statement. What
yes.
does that refer to?
Oh, the conviction statement is a statement that is used during the employment process when someone, when an employer starts to look at their resume, and they probably see that there's some gaps in the mm-hmm. time period, or if they're filling out an application and there's and the box is still there, although it's getting closer to being eliminated. That if they the question of whether or not they've spent time in prison, and so they need to have at least a paragraph in their head that explains how they ended up in prison. And we don't necessarily advocate that they tell what their crime is. We just say, yes, I did. You know, it just fess up. Yes, mm-hmm. I spent time in prison. But let me tell you what I did while I was there.
Okay.
And then they focus in on the different programs that they did, and as well as our class and what. And they, because in our class, they would accumulate 14 college credit hours. So they would finish. I mean, that's a big chunk of an associate of science degree. So they would have a written out conviction statement that we would ask them to put to memory so that mm-hmm. they would have an answer for that question when someone said, when an employer asked, well, I see you've spent some time in prison. What can you tell me about that?
And when they complete those educational hours, does
yes.
that, when they leave prison, will that transfer to
yes.
a community college where they
right.
can finish the degree?
Well, yes, because all of those hours they got are through. They become Washburn University
Washburn.
Students. Yeah.
Okay.
So we give them the form to request their transcript if they end up going to another school, so that they can mm-hmm. get those hours and build on that. Right. The other thing is if they stay in Topeka, and as soon as they leave the prison, we urge them to go to the campus and get themselves a Washburn University ID card, and then they can ride the bus for free.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what percentage of the people who complete this program, which you mm-hmm. said is all or most of them,
mm-hmm.
what percentage of them find employment that pays a livable wage
yeah.
versus, maybe I shouldn't use that term because that's open to definition, but comparing that to women who do not complete your program?
Well, I can't give you percentage of that because, frankly, you know, the only way to be able to track that would be to have contact with every student that leaves to find out. In some mm-hmm. cases, they would, many of them would connect with us again and let us know what was going on. But then there's others that don't. But what we did learn mm-hmm. is that the prison's recidivism rate was 35%. Our recidivism rate, meaning the students that had gone mm-hmm. through our program, our recidivism rate was 15%.
Okay.
So we know that.
And is that comparable to the rates for men in the men's prison? Or
you mean the 35%?
Right. And if they have a similar program in the men's
prison? Well, that's a good question. I don't know. I know that the men's prison doesn't have any program like this. They've had programs through Donnelly College where mm-hmm. they've been able to get their undergraduate degree. And I don't know what the stats are related to that, but that would be something to check out and see. But certainly, at least from what we found, that it does make a difference. And even, you know, and the nice thing about this certificate was that it's very holistic in its approach. The different modules have to do with safety and maintaining materials and maintaining machines and knowing how to do that, talking about preventive maintenance, et cetera. It had to do with kind of a broad look at how do you keep an industry moving efficiently. And that applies to any business that anybody's in. So we have women that have gone back into, they were in the restaurant business. So they've gone back to the restaurant business. But now they're managers instead of being servers. Women that had used to work the line at the meatpacking plants in Great Bend are now foremen instead of working the line. Women that have another skill set, we don't offer this, but the prison offers it, is Microsoft Office specialist. We've got women that have left, they have our certificate, but they also have Microsoft Office specialist. They've ended up in jobs where their employers have said, wow, you're really good at this with the Microsoft Office. You know, we don't have anybody here that can do that. Would you be willing to teach? And so there it goes. So they're learning skills that a lot of other people don't have. And they've got this nice package of skill sets that they can pull from. So we know it's working, but individually we don't have those kinds of numbers that you're asking for. Okay. But yeah, but
well,
we know them.
The 35% versus 15%. The 15%, is that for just minimum people, or is that for both sides?
That's for both sides. That's minimum max.
Okay,
yeah.
So it is working for the people that are going through the program from the max,
right?
And what about? So you focus on the skills and stuff. If somebody is in there that needs substance abuse treatment, you know, if they're still, you know, if they have a lot of problems with it and they're having withdrawal, can you work with them simultaneously, or do they need to?
Well, by the time they've come to us, they've already gone through withdrawal. That has passed. They may still be inclined and want to want drugs. And in some cases, I'll admit, I mean, we've had students that have left the prison, and it hasn't been very long before they were right back in it. There is another program that is happening at the prison at the same time that ours is going on. It's a different one. It approaches, it's a more therapeutic one, and it's called the Family Peace Initiative. And it grows out of batterers intervention materials, but it really starts from the point of the kind of abuse that individuals experience and how that leads into either putting up with more abuse or not really being able to take care of themselves very well, or to make positive choices in people in their lives and that kind of thing. And we find that some of our students who have really struggled with the substance abuse issues, that sometimes that program is really a positive piece to add into the mix. So I think there's a lot of opportunity still for dealing with people's sort of psychological issues around self and other, and I don't know how much of that is attended to. The Family Peace Initiative, I think, makes a really great effort in trying to address some of that. The drug abuse stuff is, you know, substance abuse is, you know, substance abuse doesn't just grow out of nothing. It grows out of some need that you have so that you want to stop feeling as bad as you feel. And until you get to whatever the crux of that issue is, I don't think you're really going to get to the point where you resolve the substance abuse. And I'm not sure, I know there's lots of programs in the prison that deal with it. The feedback I get isn't always particularly positive, but I'm not really that aware of the details of the program, but we certainly have noticed with our students that there are times when they would have great self-doubt, and a lot of that comes from probably childhood problems, and so we started trying to figure out ways to support them so that they could feel better about themselves and consequently do better in the program. So sometimes, in some cases, I would become a reader because I was also the test proctor. So I would become a reader for them, and then I would sit next to them and read with them the questions on tests. The other thing that we noted was that sometimes it was just helpful for them to have a person nearby that would just sit with them while they went through something that was anxiety producing, and that was calming for them. So I would do that. I would just go and sit next to a student for a while they answered their questions. I wouldn't tell them the answers. I just sat there with them, and that seemed to help them calm themselves enough to be able to, because my colleague and I spent a lot of time trying to create an environment that was a trusting environment and that felt safe.
And is there a website people can go to for, not necessarily just for your program since it's going to be ending,
right,
but for to see resources and similar things that people can participate on in when they get out of prison?
Well, I'm pausing too long. I don't have one, and that's terribly unfortunate. Right. I don't have one.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I want to thank you for being here. We've been talking to Beth Hill, who has been operating a program through Washburn Tech in the Women's State Prison in Topeka. And that the grant is ending, but maybe they will find a way to find some other funding.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's the 420 Drug War News. This is part three of a discussion I had with Lisa Rayville. She's the executive director of the Harm Reduction Action Center in Denver, Colorado.
Yeah, so it became the perfect storm. So in 2009, our then governor, towards the end of the year and beginning of 2010, said he wasn't going to run for reelection. So we were able to push forward. And in 2010, 81 of the 100 state legislators voted in support of syringe access programs. And it was very helpful, because, you know, not only did drug users come out and speak on behalf and trying to push forward, but also physicians and, you know, the larger community coming out and saying we need to be able to try this. It's not revolutionary. It's just good public health. And so I thought when a bill becomes a law and you move on with your life. Problem was we passed the legislation and was signed May 26, 2010. However, it took 21 months to be able to begin. So that can be very frustrating, too. So step one is passing, you know, the legislation. Steps 2 through 10 are all about implementation. So that can be where people start dragging their feet once it's actually passed as well. So some people in the community think I'm an advocate. Others think I'm a nag. But it's important that, you know, like, we pass the legislation and then push forward to be able to implement that legislation.
Well, I'm proud, or I don't know, hopeful, I guess, is that, you know, the district attorney, the sheriff, the police chief listened to me, and we came up with a law. It's a little over, well, it's a year and a half old now, misdemeanor marijuana diversion program, where they no longer arrest people, stupid kids mostly, out there on the street for 4 ounces or less of marijuana. And I guess what I'm hoping is that I can stair-step from that to show that, hey, I was right then, at least think about, consider, you know, needle exchange and or a safe injection facility. Get the ministers and the cops and, you know, the mucky mucks to go along with the idea, because as you guys have indicated, and as these safe injection facilities around the world show us, it saves lives, it saves futures, it saves money, it saves law enforcement, right?
Yep, absolutely. And I think when you have those conversations, you know, we work within the harm reduction movement, so sometimes you have to meet these decision makers where they're at on the spectrum of change, right? And continue to have those educational opportunities. And people do shift and do want to do the right thing. And so I think, you know, continuing to have those conversations is key, and it will continue to save lives in all of our communities. Thanks so much, Dean, for having me.
Their website, please visit harmreductioncenter.org. Well, here's hoping that someday, make it soon, America will quit being so paranoid about drugs and take a good look at this goddamn drug war. I'm Dean at drugtruth.net.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. You can always listen to us live and find our podcasts on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. This is Jamie reminding you our outro music is Better Man from the Playing for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Cowtown Conversations on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Monday Morning Medicine Show with Dr. Mike, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hoag. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day south of the border with Fiesta Musical, Compartiendo Familia, and Compartiendo en Noche.